This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Cray and Intel. The new Cray XC30 supercomputer, powered by Intel Xeon processors, delivers scalable performance for the most demanding computing challenges. For more information, visit www.cray.com/ownXC30.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of HPC Wire Soundbite for Sunday, June 16th, 2013, live from ISC in Leipzig, Germany. I'm Addison Snell with Intersect 360 Research, joined by my regular co-host, Nicole Hemsoth, editor of HPC Wire. Nicole, welcome to Germany.
It's nice to see you in person, Addison.
And we've got a special podcast here to get things started with the four founders of the top 500 list. We're joined by Eric Strohmeier, Horst Simon, Hans Moyer, and Jack Dungera. Gentlemen, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
A pleasure.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, the big news actually kind of leaked out already for the top 500 list. Everyone's looking at the Guangzhou Tianhe 2 or Milky Way 2 supercomputing system. What are your thoughts on that?
Let's see, I guess I was there and saw the machine. It's quite an impressive collection of equipment, a room full of boxes, a few hundred cabinets, really in a very tight, confined space. They basically had an issue with the computer room itself and putting the machine together in Chensha. That machine will be disassembled and moved to Guangzhou by the end of the year. It's an impressive machine at a number of levels. It's about peak performance of around 55 petaflops, achieved performance on HPL of around 33.8, I think, petaflops. 3 million cores in the system.
Wow.
Incredible amount of parts being assembled. In terms of power, it's up there. It's the highest powered machine that I know of, I think. It's about 17 point something megawatts, 24 megawatts if you include the cooling. It's a machine that I think will be number one for a while in the States.
How long do you think?
Well, so in terms of the DOE plan, and DOE is a major investor in terms of computational science and simulation, the machines that are projected, I think, are something like 2015 is the next machine, and that'll be a machine going into Los Alamos National Lab, a machine that they call Trinity. I don't know what performance point that machine's going to come in at, if it's even going to be at this level or not, but it's going to be the next machine on the list, so that's a year and a half away.
Thanks, Jack. Hans, you were nodding your head at the power requirements in particular. I saw you about to jump in.
Yeah. Funny enough, I was remembered exactly 11 years ago. In June 2002 in Heidelberg, we had the announcement of the number one at this time. That was the famous Earth simulator. And the famous Earth simulator has had not exactly, but very close, a factor of 1,000 less than now the Milky Way 2. The Earth simulator has had 35.9 teraflops, and they have 33.8 or 9 petaflops. That is, close
that's
to
a
exactly.
Very good point.
Was very interesting, since also this Earth simulator was a great machine at this time. It was more than the performance was more than the next four or five systems in the list at this time.
So I think it was five times faster than the
previous. There were some of the next two. So this was what I felt when become aware of this new number one system.
So in terms of efficiency, there are two questions a lot of people have asked about this particular system. You know, what types of applications will it run? I mean, maybe we can get to that in a second, but the efficiency angle, I think, is one of the big questions here, especially in the context of the rest of the list.
Yeah, it has been at the center of the attention of the industry for quite a couple of years now, that the power consumption of the large system has been growing and is growing quite rapidly. We have been tracking power consumption for about 5 years now in this project, And for the number one system, it has increased by a factor of five in those 5 years. And that is a trend which is not sustainable in the long run. So that is something very important and something very close to our heart. And the interesting aspect there with the number one system and the, many systems in the top 10 actually is that they use either coprocessors or other means of acceleration, or they are architectures which are really designed for high power efficiency of scientific numerical scientific computations. And the Tianhe 2, the Milky Way 2 system, is one of those systems which really pushes the envelope. The NUDT, the Chinese organization which built this system and designed it, didn't just follow the path of the older system where they used NVIDIA GPUs, but they actually went into a slightly different direction and used the Intel Xeon Phi processor. And it shows, even so the system has a very high power consumption, it is actually one of the most power efficient architectures on the list. It's one of the 10 most power efficient architectures on the list, and a prime example of what modern supercomputers look like.
We were talking about the power efficiency here and moving that forward, and Jack brought up the question of how long this will be number one on the list. Horst, you wrote a great column on the path to exascale, and you're right in there with these DOE plans. Are we on the right track, or how far away are we?
Well, I would say Tianhe has only confirmed what I said, because it was said before, the total power consumption, cooling plus processing, is 25 megawatts. So we hit a point today that everybody would like to see exaflop systems to operate at 25 megawatts. So that means from today onward, we have to live within the same power envelope and just produce technology that's more energy efficient. And my argument was, in terms of processor technology, we are basically going on a simple Moore's law curve. There is no more magic, no more silver bullet in terms of processor technology. The areas where there is maybe some additional technology improvements possible, of course, interconnects, memory technology. But unlike in the past, where one could see 3 or 4 years in advance what the next system will be like, if I look 3 or 4 years in advance, I don't see a radically different system emerging yet. Nobody has really developed a radically different system from the type of system we see today in the top 10 that would convince me that we have solved the power problem. So I think we're still on the path to exascale in the 2020s, but not by 2019.
If we're looking at new applications to run on new architectures, are we also then looking at a new benchmark eventually? I mean, to what point have we hit, you know, a LINPACK wall or a performance measurement wall, right?
So yeah. When I was in China, they gave a list of applications they said we're going to be running on this machine. And there's a standard list. They involve things like weather and climate simulation, oil exploration, biomedical research, high energy equipment development, high energy research, animation, new materials, the kinds of things that we do on our high performance machines. So there's nothing terribly out of line in that context. So I see this machine as being a machine very similar to a machine that would be deployed in the US for applications that we would find very common in terms of that. With respect to a different benchmark, there is some concern that architectures are targeting that benchmark, HPL, the LINPACK benchmark, and as a result of targeting that benchmark, they sort of skew the architecture in a way that may not be as friendly or usable to the application sets. And we really need to rethink perhaps how the machines are evaluated in terms of real applications, in terms of what the application basis is, rather than something that was developed 35 years ago, to be honest. LINPACK is a benchmark that has evolved over 35 years. It was a good measurement of systems at a certain point, but perhaps today we need to augment it with another form.
You make a good point, Jack, which, I mean, the top 500 list is great in that it makes a simple ranking for the general population to understand and say, here's what's capable with computing today, but the side effect of that is, do you have a responsibility to the industry to make sure that metric is really serving ourselves in terms of what it encourages us to produce?
Yeah. Yeah, so I think, you know, the top 500 has a place. I don't want to say that it's going to be abandoned in any sense. It has a place. It serves a purpose. It's a clear, easy measure. It has historic information there that we don't want to lose, and it has to be carried forward in that sense. But we should be looking at other metrics, and we have a whole suite of benchmarks that people have developed and perhaps should be developing that target applications more closely so that they reflect really what the applications are capable of. So we don't want to design a machine that's skewed in a way that focuses on a benchmark that really isn't serving the needs of the application.
Is that benchmark coming? Is it going to have a score? Will it be as simple as I'm number 78 on this new benchmark?
Right, so then it becomes a little bit more complicated. We have things already like the graph benchmark, yeah, which is a measurement which serves a different community perhaps than what the HPL does. And you know, we've been in conversation with the Department of Energy back in the States and looking at something that targets their applications and trying to come up with a set of measurements which better reflects that and tries to get a predictive indicator about the hardware matching to the applications in a better form. So that's sort of a direction that we're going to pursue. I'm going to give a talk here at ISC on Tuesday, which will discuss this in a little bit more detail and try to outline what that benchmark might look like.
Well, we've been talking a lot about the number one system and the implications on the industry worldwide, what people are thinking about. What about numbers 2 through 500? I mean, is there more of a story here beyond the new number one system?
Well, one thing I noticed is that the number 500 performance has been trailing off. So in old days, there was always a big difference. The distance between 1 and 500 seemed to be on the same curve. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if it's actually number 500 that's going slower or whether we have bigger and bigger number one systems. So Eric looks over and Jack will get some of those things in more detail. I suspect that actually 500 is trailing off.
You think Horst thinks 500 is trailing off? What do you think, Eric?
I think we are for a couple of years. We have been in a situation that there are two big components of the market in the top 500. One are the commercial systems, which are dominating by numbers by a large amount. And the second market is the scientific numerical market, which is the high-end systems but the smaller in numbers. And for the last couple of years, those two markets have been buying and have been focusing on very different architectures. All these accelerated systems, and we have about 10% of the list now which use accelerators and similar architectures, all these systems are installed in scientific computations, in scientific centers, and they tend to be large. On the other hand, in the broad market, in the commercial market, those technologies have not had any impact. And I think the low end, the number 500 spot, is very much driven by the broad market, by the commercial market, and it's trailing because those markets, they cannot follow the scientific market in terms of performance growth right now because they do not employ accelerators.
So it's the application challenge because many of the traditional midstream sort of the missing middle type commercial applications just haven't yet had the chance to adapt to accelerators.
I'm very sure if somebody comes up with efficient implementation of databases on GPUs or accelerators that the industry would immediately jump on it and use them because they are very cost conscious and they would use the most cost efficient architecture they have. But that has not happened, so they cannot use it.
You just gave somebody the best business idea of the last 5 years there. How many submissions were there this year?
I don't compile the list myself anymore, but typically it's about, we get about 800.
800.
So one of the interesting things about accelerators is the actual number of machines that have accelerators has gone down.
Yeah,
so that was slightly down. So that seems to be contrary to the trend, I would say. But if you take a look at the sum of the 500 computers, the numbers are actually going up. So today, the sum of the 500 computers, if you take a look at that number and look at what component is going with accelerators, it's about 33%. 33% of the top 500 aggregate performance is with accelerators. Last time it was about 22%, mm-hmm. And the time before that it was about 11%. So you can see that trend. So big machines are using the accelerators. That's clear with the Chinese machine that was just put in place. Incredible power with accelerators deployed. So I would say that maybe the top end machines are really focusing on that accelerator to boost the performance.
Well, you see that in the top 10. A lot of the top 10 systems are using it. Exactly. The number 2 system, Titan, is using it too.
Yeah, exactly.
I would actually predict that in about 2 years, there will be no more non-accelerator based system in the top 10.
Need scalability across the performance spectrum? The Cray XC30 supercomputer family delivers on Cray's commitment to an adaptive supercomputing architecture that provides both extreme scalability and sustained performance. Leveraging a robust processor roadmap, high-performance interconnect, and flexible network topology, users can configure the exact machine to meet their specific requirements today and also remain confident that they can upgrade and enhance their system to address the most challenging multi-petaflop application demands of the future. To learn more about Intel Xeon processor-enabled Cray supercomputers, visit www.cray.com/ownXC30.
So, I just have a quick question. So we've got the founders meeting here. What strikes you most? What's the biggest trend overall in your experiences with the list? What stands out to you? What is it every year you think back and go, wow, I'm part of something that's just so remarkable here? Jack?
Well, again, this list here is I think the headline news is this big machine from China, the deployment of a machine that came ahead of its time almost. It was unexpected. We weren't thinking it was going to happen until sometime perhaps November or next year. Yet it was deployed. It's constructed, working, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're getting ready to start production building of another machine. In that way, so I would say that's the most striking thing on the list in my looking at it.
We are actually in a situation which is not dissimilar from the time 20 years ago when we started the list, and that is that as a community we go through. We have to find a new architecture, a new way to build supercomputers, and in those days it was the change of the guard from vector mainframes to massively parallel systems, and then to clustered systems.
Yeah.
And nowadays, we just don't know where the road is going to go. So the last couple of years, we have seen, especially at the very high end, a change of architectures. People are willing to try out new things. They try out GPUs. They try out the Intel Xeon Phi. They tried out the BlueJean. Fujitsu went a totally different, more traditional route with the K computer. So there is a number of competing architectures, and it's not clear which of the architectures is going to solve those two big problems, which are power efficiency as well as performance efficiency on real applications.
If any of them, right?
Yeah, if any of them.
First?
Well, I was going to say, the really remarkable thing is that it has been 20 years and 41 lists, and we're still at it. And that's even more remarkable if you think that going back further than what Hans was just saying a while ago, going back to 1993 when we had a 59 gigaflop connection machine number one. So we have not just a factor of 1,000, we have a factor of 1,000,000 that we've covered in that period, which is quite amazing. If I would have had a chance to talk to myself in 93 and would say, well, you're still going to do this in 20 years and the machines will be 1,000,000 times faster, I would have not believed myself.
And you would also have been skeptical about actually achieving a growth of 1,000,000
there
in 20 years.
Yeah, right.
1,000,000 times. Well, and so we've got all these issues in front of us. Of course, the great thing about doing this at the start of the conference is that this is just sort of a bang that gets things going. Hans, we've got ISC ahead of us here in Leipzig. A top 500 conversation gets us going. What else are you looking forward to over the course of this week?
Yeah. You know that the top 500 is playing another role here at the ISC conference than in the US at the SC conference. The top 500 announcement is from the very beginning in June 93, part of the opening session. So I guess it has much more value, the top 500 business, so to say, than in the US, where they push us to go in a BOF session. We are the biggest one, of course, there. But here we feel much better with the top 500. And so it is a win-win situation for the ISC and for the top 500 to be announced here in our conference and in the US. But I have quite another question, like what you think about that. Do you think it will be possible that the Chinese are able to sell one of their systems outside of China? Do you think that will be possible in the next couple of years, Jack?
Well, so take a look at what's happening with the Chinese machines and the people who are at the National University for Defense Technology. They've been building these machines for a long time. This is not something which has just started. It's an ongoing process. They've been continuously replacing components of that new computer system with indigenous parts that are built in China, parts that come from the interconnect, parts that come from the operating system, parts that come from software tools. So at the moment, they have a machine which is Chinese, except for the
processors, yeah.
Except for the engine.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
the engine is provided by Intel. Engine, I would say, you take a look at the front end for this Chinese machine, it's a Chinese processor. And that Chinese processor is a factor of two behind Intel's Ivy Bridge, which is state-of-the-art.
Yeah.
So they have a processor which is very close to Intel state-of-the-art, which perhaps in another rev or two would replace that. So this should be a wake-up call. You know, once the Chinese start producing systems that can sort of replace Intel in China, that's a tremendous impact in terms of the overall effect of things. And once they start selling that to outside of China, to the rest of Asia, it's going to be a tremendous impact to Europe and perhaps even to the U.S. So we should really look at this as an investment that is continuing. It's an ongoing investment. It's a concerted effort to produce high-performance systems that are Chinese in origin. And when that happens, and which it could happen in the next couple of generations, it can be a big changer, a game changer for high-performance computing.
I'll go ahead and answer a question instead of just asking one, since it was Hans doing the asking this time. I do think it is possible that by the end of the decade, you'll see maybe not this exact architecture, but versions of it being sold commercially and outside of China. I noticed that this is the first major supercomputer deployment in China under the new government administration, under Qi and Li and the new Politburo, which tends to go in every 10 years. And one of their major initiatives, of course, is the development of the Chinese economy, both domestically and internationally.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent that the Chinese government is interested in establishing their leadership in this industry, I think it's very reasonable to expect that they'll want this to be a commercially viable project for them, or at least some downstream version of it to be a viable project internationally.
Everyone is nodding in agreement,
yes,
all of you.
Well, Hans, what else are we doing this week other than talking about Top 500?
Oh, we have the best program ever of ISC, I would say and claim. We have now the position that ISC is HPC must-go event. It is, in a certain sense, since Dresden the case, yeah? Before it was not. So Dresden we started in 2006 after Heidelberg, but the main drawback of Heidelberg has been that it was not possible to run an excellent exhibition. This was the old Stadthalle, and the Stadthalle, the upper levels in June, were becoming very, very hot and uncomfortable for the exhibitors, you know that. And this was a kickoff condition for running an exhibit. But this started in Dresden, and we stayed 3 years in Dresden, only 3 years. Since then, the interest in exhibiting at ISC was becoming so big that we had to leave Dresden after 3 years and went to Hamburg. And Hamburg, of course, was also a very professional conference 4 times. And now we are here. So we have now also a program. You know, we started with a single track conference over in Heidelberg. Also, a single track only was possible. I had one lecture hall. Finish, that's it. And so now, since Dresden, we have the possibility to run parallel sessions many parallel sessions, and this is necessary. We have more than 2,000 attendees. There are different and diverging interests, and so you have to offer a lot of different things. And so we are offering very, very attractive keynote presentations.
Yes.
Monday, conference keynote, Tuesday, the Intel keynote about Moore's Law, Wednesday, the traditional keynote by Thomas Sterling, and on Thursday by Gerhard Wellein. This is also interesting, and is a keynote which is, after what Bailey told us, and he has a new approach there. Bailey. We have established so-called distinguished session speakers, where, say, one is talking about big data, but not only for 20 minutes or half an hour, but 45 minutes. We have the energy sessions touching these things. We have the chat by Horst. We started very successfully, and again now we have this what he just mentioned about the
missing
middle. So we have a variety of new things to present. We have extended the exhibition time. The exhibition time now, the exhibition starts tomorrow already after lunch at 1 p.m. And
starting at earlier, there's a lot of parallel content.
We have a lot of new things, and I guess we are now really one of the two HPC must-to-go events in the world, no doubt.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I'm looking forward to the new vendor showdown, the revised hot seat session. The audience is actually going to get to rate the vendors and how well they did.
So this is replacing the famous hot seat, and I'm very interested what you will do, especially you. And
we're going to have a lot of fun with it.
We will have a lot of fun. And so we have thought over many, many new things, and I guess and hope that Leipzig will become a success. I'm not sure whether we can outperform the number of attendees of last year in Hamburg. We have had 2,403, and now we need around 80 more to get this number.
80 more, so we'll get the podcast out. If you're listening, get over to Leipzig. It's a beautiful city. We're all set up to have a great week at ISC. Eric Strohmeyer, Horst Simon, Hans Moyer, Jack Dangera, thank you very much for joining us for this special edition of HPC Wire Soundbite.
Thanks, fellas.
You're welcome.
You are welcome.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Cray and Intel, the new Cray XC30 supercomputer, powered by Intel Xeon processors, delivers scalable performance for the most demanding computing challenges. For more information, visit www.cray.com/ownxc30.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite. Got a question or comment? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.